Do we know anything more about tutorials, or should we take care of that?
I haven't, so yes.
Yeah.
So one option, but we can talk about this stuff in the future.
Yeah, that's right.
For us to take an extra one.
Yeah, I would only do that if that kind of gave us counted for something for the future. But okay, so. What should I tell them today? This question isn't me. I guess we'll announce. I guess we'll probably assign them randomly, and then they'll have to fix the ones that conflict. That might be the easiest. There might be some in the conflicts, but I guess that's actually just probably another one.
So we don't assign them to
the groups. But ITO could. ITO can. That's what I mean. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I guess Will can announce that by email, I guess. I don't know what the best.
Email and the website, because a lot of them are.
Yeah, I think there's some lag in the registrations. It might be, that might be caught up now. But yeah. Okay. Let's see, how do I do.
Yeah, I guess just.
Oh.
I guess we'll just have to be vague until.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll. Yes, as long as it's resolved by the end of tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so
that's right.
Definitely an announcement.
Okay. Yeah.
But, sorry.
Yeah, it's, right. How do I... Yeah. There's keynote. Keynote. Okay. Okay. Yep, good. So first, yes, thanks to everyone for finding the new room. So let me start by saying something about tutorials. The tutorials will begin next week. We do not have the tutorial group assignments yet. But so what we'll do is ITO will assign, ITO will initialize, we'll have somewhere between 7 and 9 sections of tutorials. It's not been... not been precisely worked out yet. And ITO will initialize the assignment of students to tutorials in a random fashion. And then you can look and see if that creates a conflict for you. You can then talk to ITO and have them move you into a different slot. And we will have an announcement both over email and on the website tomorrow about the giving you the initial assignment that you can then talk to ITO to adjust. Does that sound? Yeah. Okay. So what I'm going to talk about today is probability. So we're now going to start kind of the more technical content of the class. So I'm going to start by talking about what's essentially a language for talking about events that are uncertain. And so that's what probability is. And so the concepts we're going to talk about are, we're going to talk about this concept of random variables. We're going to talk about discrete, we're going to talk about probability distributions. We'll define that formally, both discrete and continuous distributions. And I'll give several several examples of continuous distributions, including the Gaussian distribution. That's one that's going to come up, well, forever if you do statistics and machine learning, and it will also come up in this course. And then if we have time, I'll start to talk about estimation. So the first question is, why do we want to talk about probability anyway? So probability is a branch of mathematics, and it deals with the analysis of random events, of things that are uncertain. So examples of this would be, well, probability was developed to talk about things like gambling. So to talk about cards and dice and, you know, roulette wheels and things like that. And those are some of the simplest examples of probabilities. But you can also use them to talk about other kinds of events. So for example, events in the social sciences. For example, it is currently the case that I do not know whether my first child will be a boy or a girl, or if it will exist. And so for that, since I can have a probability distribution over that to represent, well, what's my belief about whether that'll happen or not. You can also create probability distributions by aggregating. You can create a random event that's the aggregate of other random events. So the number of boy children I will have in the next year is a random event. And then we can take the sum of that over all the people in the United Kingdom, and we get the number of boy children that were born in the UK last year. And that's also a random event that we can develop probability distributions over. And also you can do, you can have probability distributions over things that aren't numbers at all. For example, you do not yet know what the title of the next slide will be on the projector. So therefore you might have some probability distribution that represents what you believe about the next slide. And so that raises an interesting point, which is the kind of uncertainty that you have depends on what you know already. So for example, if I remember what I put on the slides, which you'd be surprised, then to me it might not be uncertain what the title of the next slide is. So I might have a kind of a trivial probability distribution over it. Whereas if you've downloaded the slides already, which I guess probably isn't possible, I probably haven't put them up yet, then you might also not be certain. Whereas if you don't have that information, then you'll have a different distribution over what you think the title would be. So so uncertainty depends on the amount of uncertainty that you have, depends on what you know already, and whether to treat something as such something that's known for certain, or whether to treat it as something I'm going to talk about probabilistically, it's something of a pragmatic decision. So at this point, you must be wondering, well, what is the title of the next slide? And that's this. So why am I telling you about probability? You can imagine, well, if I'm just trying to find patterns in data, you know, maybe I just want to find, you know, patterns that occur often, right? Maybe I don't need to talk about the probability of them occurring. And it turns out it actually is fairly useful to talk about probability. And the reason for that is that the training data itself is a source of uncertainty. So there may be the case that there's noise in the training data. So for example, if you want to do machine learning in sensor networks, right, you might be getting in, say, a reading from some kind of radar or some kind of laser range finder. So in that case, you know that there's some kind of noise that's coming in just as part of the process. And you might want to do some smoothing to say, I want to think about what the true value is when I have this random noise. The other kind of uncertainty that you can have is sampling error. So for example, I chose some documents to put in the training set whenever I run a machine learning algorithm. And the performance of that algorithm and the estimates that I end up with depend on which instances I happen to choose for the training set. So if I do something like random sampling, so for example, maybe I randomly sample people to participate in a survey, or maybe I randomly sample documents for the web. So that kind of sampling is another source of uncertainty about the training data. Now, there are many machine learning algorithms that that we'll see next week that actually use probabilities explicitly. And so for that reason, so they explicitly have some probability of generating the observed data. But even if that's not the case, often you might analyze an algorithm in terms of, well, in terms of the probability of the data set that was used to generate. So that's why it's useful to know about probabilities. So now I'm going to start talking about them. So probability works as kind of an add-on to set theory. So what you start with is you have a set of all possible events. So that's called the sample space. We're going to denote this by capital by omega. So an event is something that could happen in the world, and that's going to be some kind of subset of omega. So for example, if we're dealing with the gender of my next child, then Omega might only be the set, you know, boy, girl, and no child. I guess depending on your knowledge of biology. Whereas if you're, you know, whereas I might be, say, if I flip a coin 10 times, then Omega would be the set of all possible series of 10 flips. So like HHHHH, TTTTT would be one element of Omega. And so what a random variable, and so the, so that's, and so every event, so an event is a thing that's going to be, is going to be what has a probability. So there will be some probability of the event. So one event in terms of the gender of my next child will be the set boy-girl. So that's the event that I either have a boy or have a girl, which is the probability that, and that's, that set is going to be assigned a probability. And that probability is the probability that I have a child at all. So another fundamental concept that we need is the concept of a random variable. So what a random variable is, it's a map from the sample space to sum up to any other set. So it might be a map from the sample space to the set of integers 0, 1, 2, 3. It might be a map from the sample space to the set of real numbers. We'll see examples of both. So here are some examples of random variables. I might you know, randomly pick a car in Edinburgh and observe its color. So then you might think of the sample space as being the set of all automobiles in Edinburgh, and the random variable is a map from the actual car to the colors blue, green, red, and so on. Another example would be, you could also have any function of a random variable is also a random variable. So if I toss two coins and I record the number of heads squared, that's also a random variable. So here the sample space is consists of four elements, H, 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 T, T, H, and T, T. And then this map X maps to one of the three possible values. So there are two kinds of random variables, and we classify them based on their outcomes. So the two kinds of random variables are discrete variables and continuous variables. So we're going to use the following notation for talking about the probability of random variables taking a value. So that is, we'll usually denote random variables by capital letter, like that capital X there, and we'll denote a value that can be taken by a random variable as that little x there. So then if we write, we write this P x equals x, that refers to the probability that the random variable x takes some value, big X takes some value little x. And usually because we've used the same letter in capital and lowercase, we'll kind of shorten this notation to make it more compact. So we'll use this notation P of x to mean the probability that that this thing x takes a value, that big X takes that value little x. So an example would be if I had a fair coin, I might have big X be 0 for heads and 1 for tails. And then if the coin is fair, then I'd have this function P of 0 would be 1 half, and P of 1 would also be a half. And that would be, and those would be the two probabilities. This function P of X is called the probability mass function. Now, because these are probabilities, they have to sum to 1, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't be, a half wouldn't mean anything. 50-50. And so the way we write this is we'll say the sum over all x, so this is a little x, so that means the sum over whatever values this random variable can take of the probability of x. So the sum over all values has to equal 1. So here are some examples of discrete distributions. So for example, we talked about a fair coin toss where the values were 0, 1. If it weren't a fair coin, so for example, if I were trying to cheat you, then I'd have different probabilities. So maybe P of 0 would be a third, and P of 1 would be 2/3. Another example of a discrete probability distribution would be if we had assigned the tutorial groups yet, then you know maybe I could collect the last names of everyone in the class, and I could count the number of characters in their last name, and so then I'd get some data set like that. And I could view that as a sample from a discrete distribution. So on the that could take values from 0 if I guess you had no name. So maybe 1 to infinity. Another example would be you could take an example from text. So I could say the third word on this slide, coin, right? That's a random variable. I could have sampled it randomly from the dictionary. I did not. And that's another example. So given any discrete random variable, you can view it as basically a table of probability values. So if we wanted to view this graphically, let's take this this data set that I have in the middle of this slide, and I can put it on this graph here. So I apologize, the axes are a little bit hard to read, but the x-axis here is the number of characters in the person's last name, and the y-axis is, if you go back to that data set on the previous slide, you know, what were the number of people that had names of that length? And so I get some kind of bar graph that says how often did each of those name lengths appear in this data? So that's an example of frequencies, but it's not an example of probabilities, right? Because these are numbers that don't go to one. So it could have been the case that those frequencies were sampled from some probability distribution that looks like the thing on the right-hand side. Now, the way I got the graph on the right-hand side is I just took the counts on the left and I divided them by the total number of names. So then what I get is now each of these bins is, I could think of it as a probability. I could define a probability distribution that corresponds to this graph. And what that's going to be is the probability of each name is that observed normalized frequency. So that's an example of using a histogram to think about a probability distribution. So that is how we define distributions over a single random variable. But most of the time, we don't just want to talk about one random variable. We want to talk about a number of random variables that are related to each other. So the way we do that is by this concept of a joint distribution. And a joint distribution is going to be the same thing, in some sense the same thing as a distribution on a single random variable, except where a distribution of a single random variable was sort of a table of probability values that added up to one. Now what I'm going to have is a table over all assignments of multiple variables. So an example would be in modeling text. Usually I don't want to model just the probability of one word occurring. I want to model the probability of the entire document. So I could think of the entire document as a vector of random variables where each one says how often does the word rutabaga occur in the document. So an example here is suppose that I'm doing spam filtering. So there I might have one random variable that says is the value, that talks about the words that occur in the document. So X could take the value yes, it could be a binary random variable. So it will take the value yes if the word password occurs in the email, and no if it doesn't. So that's what X is going to be. Y is going to be something like, is going to be basically the outcome of this classification task. But for the purposes of this lecture, we can just think of it as another random variable, another coin flip, whose values happen to be the labels ham and spam. So what I want is a probability distribution over all four assignments of yes, no, it contains the word password, and ham, spam, you know, whether it's ham or not. So you can visualize a joint distribution in terms of a table that looks like this, where each one of those numbers is a probability. It's a probability of that assignment to those two variables, and the sum over the entire table now has to be one, because one of those four events has to happen. So the notation we're going to use is going to look like this thing at the bottom of the slide, which is just so we'll use this comma is sort of like a conjunction, right? So this comma means the probability that X equals yes and that Y equals ham, and that's just the value that was in that table. So if I define a distribution over the values of both of these variables combined, right, that should automatically tell me how many, that should tell me a probability distribution over X by itself and a probability distribution over Y by itself. So you can see that if you think of this as a table of frequencies, right? So if I told you that I sampled 100 documents, and of them, one of them was yes ham, 49 of them were no ham, and then 25 of them each were and 50 were spam, and 25 was yes spam, and 25 was no spam, then you could know, well, how many documents contained the word, how many documents were ham, right? It would be just the sum over that column. Right, so that means that in this there's a 50%, and it's the same thing with probabilities. So in this there's a 50% chance that Y equals ham, and there's a 50% chance that Y equals spam. So those are called marginal probabilities. The reason that they're called marginal is that you can imagine writing them on the margins of this table, right? Because they're sums over rows and sums over columns. And the way we're going to write this is by the sum rule. So that's if I give you a joint distribution over the values X and Y, then I can get a marginal distribution over X. And the way that I do it is I just sum over all values of Y. So an example would be, oh, if you look at this previous table, what would be the probability that Y equals ham? Or a more interesting one, if I wanted to know the probability that the document contained password, I would sum over the rows and get 26, 0.26. So that's what a marginal probability is. So it gets more complicated if we start talking about conditional probabilities. So a condition. So remember when I said before that our that the amount of uncertainty or the kind of uncertainty that you have about an event depends on what you know already. So a conditional probability is a way to talk about what you know already. So this would be an example, like given, so an example would be given that I've seen the slides before, you know, what's the third word on slide four? So the way we're going to do this is suppose that we have, first let's just think about if we have two random variables called X and Y. And so then I want to, so suppose that I told you for certain that the value, the random variable Y took some value little y. Then what knowledge would I have about the random variable X? And that is another kind of probability distribution. We're going to call that a conditional probability distribution, and we're going to notate it by that equation there. So we're going to use that vertical bar means conditioned on. And so the way this is defined is so we have again the probability that X, that big X equals little X, given that big Y equals little Y. And we're going to, and we're going to have the same kind of abbreviation. We'll call this the probability that X is given Y. And we're going to define that as the joint probability over X and Y divided by the marginal probability of Y. So why do we have that definition? Well, let's go back to this the ham spam example. Do I get any chalk, or am I just going to have to talk through it? I guess I'll just talk through it. So if we go back here, so imagine I saw 100 documents with those frequencies, so the probability times 100. And then I said, well, if I told you that a document is ham, what's the probability that it's going to contain the word password? Well, if I just showed you that table, well, what you'd say is, oh, well, there are 50 documents that are ham documents. And of those 50 documents, one of them has the word password. So I think the probability should be 1 out of 50. And I think so too, and that's the that's why we have that thing here. So there, the p of x y is this probability 0.1, and p of y is the column sum, which is 0.5. So another way you can define this is by this product rule of probabilities, and so you get that if you just take p of y and multiply by both sides. So then you can find that the joint probability of x and y is always the, as a consequence of this definition that we made, is just the marginal probability of X times the conditional probability of Y given X. So, or I could have written it the other way and put the marginal probability of Y first, and by using the same definition. And so this is called the product rule of probabilities. So this is a way of kind of chaining your knowledge. If I told you a value, so if you wanted to sample, say you wanted to sample a value of jointly of X and Y, you could sample X first, and then once you know X, you could sample the value of y given x. So that's conditional probability. So there's an important theorem, which is a simple consequence of this definition of conditional probability. And that's called Bayes' rule. So actually named after a reverend, after an English reverend in the 18th century. And what this is, so the product rule that we just had says that we just have, if you look at this slide, I just said that P of X times P of Y given X equals P of Y times P of X given Y. So if I take those last two there and divide both sides by P of X, then what I get is this thing, that P of Y given X equals P of X given Y times P of Y over P of X. So what that gives you is a way of, if I tell you the conditional probability of Y happening given that I know X, well, actually, in this way, suppose I give you the probability that X happens given that I know Y. And you want to kind of flip that around and work in the inverse and say, well, what's the probability that Y would have happened given that I knew X? Then this formula is how you would do that. So this thing in the denominator, we've already seen how to compute marginal probabilities. So this thing, P of X, I could compute if I had the joint distribution. It would be the sum over all Y of P of X comma Y. And then we saw from the product rule of probabilities that P of X comma Y is just that product. P of x given y times p of y. So one way you can look at that is that thing in that summation over y is the same thing that's in the numerator, right? So essentially what the Bayes rule is saying, if I want to compute p of y given x, just look at all values of y, right? Compute p of x given y times p of y. That's going to give me some number. It's going to give me one number for each value of y, and then divide by the sums to make it sum to 1. And that's what Bayes' rule is doing. So an example of it, we'll see an example of this in classification. So for example, suppose a random variable y is like a class label. So maybe it's ham or spam, if I'm doing spam filtering. And then x is one of the features, like we talked about last week. Then what p of y would represent would be the prior distribution of a label. So it would just be if I looked at all of the data that I could possibly have, without looking at any of the feature vectors, what are the proportions of the two classes? And then what p of y given x is suppose I told you that the document was in one class, or the training instance was in one class versus another class, then what, this is y given x on the slide, okay, yeah. So if I tell you y given x, that would be suppose I gave you a feature vector. And then I said, based on this feature vector, what is the probability of y being in each of the class label being in one of the classes given this feature vector? So we'll call this the posterior distribution because you've observed this after seeing the feature vector, and this will be the posterior distribution over y given a data point x. So all of these. So up until now, I've been talking about discrete random variables. But now I also want to talk about continuous random variables. So sometimes we'll want some, instead of just having a random value that belongs to this kind of discrete set, like words or class labels, sometimes we'll want a random variable to be a real number. So an example of this would be like the heights and weights of people in the class. Or another example that I have on the slide would be, suppose I bought a haggis from the store, which I do often, and I want to say, well, I'll measure the length of it. So then I'll get some number of centimeters of the length of the haggis. And if you haven't done this yet, I recommend that you do it because they're quite tasty. And so then I would get, so for each date, for each haggis, I would get some length. And so that would be, so I have this point on the x-axis here is the length of the haggis. So you could imagine saying, well, I want to have probability distribution over this length. So how am I going to do that? So one thing you can imagine doing is saying, well, I'll convert this into a discrete random variable. So I'll have, 10 centimeters to 11 centimeters. That'll be one outcome if the haggis is in that length. 11 centimeters to 12 centimeters, that's another outcome, and so on. So then I can make a frequency table, like I did on the previous slide, where instead of lengths of names, I have lengths of haggises. And then I've solved the problem. Sometimes you want to do that, and sometimes that's a good idea. Sometimes that can get hard to work with, and it's actually easier to work in a continuous space than in a discrete space, especially when I have something like this, where I expect it to be a number. So one thing you can do is say, well, suppose instead of 10 to 11, suppose I took the bin size to 0, right? So instead of 10 to 11, I went from 10 to 10 and a half, or maybe instead of 10 to 10 and a half, I went from 10 to 10.1. So what I get there, so then what happens if I take the bin size to 0 is I get this thing that looks like that graph at the top. So what that is that's this thing called a probability density function. And it gives you a sense of how distributed the probability points, how distributed the points are on different lengths of the line. So in the two places where I have two peaks, that means that the points are higher. And so I have, I expect to see more data there. So formally, the way that you use a density function is, if I want to know the probability that the length of the haggis is within some length a to b centimeters, then what I do is I integrate the probability density function. So I say I just take the integral from a to b of p of x, and that gives me the probability that the length falls in that interval. And that's so there are two things that you can see from that definition. There are two things you can see immediately. The first is that the probability density function always has to be positive. And the reason for that is if it were negative, then I'd get a negative probability. And that doesn't make any sense. And the other thing is that if I integrate it over the entire line, so if I integrate it from negative infinity to infinity over p of x, then that integral has to be 1. Just like the sum over everything that could possibly happen has to be 1. So that's what a density function is. Now, formally, you think of a continuous random variable as just being any map from, that should be an omega rather than a sigma. So any map from the sample space to the real line. And all of the things that we talked about on the previous slide, so we talked about joint densities, we talked about continuous, we talked about conditional distributions, and we talked about Bayes' rule, all of those work for density functions in the same way that they work for probability mass functions. So in fact, all of the equations on the previous slide still hold, but for where I think of P and X as being a function of a continuous, as a density function, as opposed to a probability mass function. Now, okay, so that's kind of your background on what random variables are. Now, there are certain summaries of a random variable that are going to be important, and those are the mean and the variance. So the mean is just the average value, right? So just like I could have the average value of a sample, you can have an average value of the probability distribution. And so the average value of a sample is, of course, you just sum up all the data points and then divide by the number. In a similar way, the mean here is an integral. So it's an integral of the density function p of x times the value x. And one way you can think about the mean is it's the balancing point of the distribution. So if I were to stick my finger under that graph, like a mobile, and so if I stuck it too far on one side, the density would push me over here versus over here, the place where it'd be balanced is the mean. So the other thing that's interesting is you also want to measure how spread out the distribution is around the mean. And the way we do that is by the variance. So the variance is, so if I take mu to be the mean, the variance is the average squared distance between a randomly chosen value of the variable and the mean. So the way we write that is if we take x minus mu squared, that's the distance between some realization of x and the mean, and then I'll average that over all possible values of x, weighted by p of x. And so that's the variance. So I've written both of these for continuous variables, but if I wanted discrete variables, then as long as they were numbers, I could do the same thing by changing those integrals into sums. There's also some other notations. So here we use mu and sigma squared to denote the mean and variance. I could also denote them as E of X and V of X, and that means the same thing. Okay, so here's a simple example of a continuous distribution and a density function, and that's called the uniform distribution. So what this is, it's the simplest possible example of a continuous value. So suppose I wanted a continuous random variable that takes values in the set 0 to n in such a way that, intuitively speaking, all points are equally likely, right? So I'm as likely to get a number between 0 and 1 as I am to get a number n minus 1 to n. And so that's called the uniform distribution. The density function looks like this. And so, you know, why does it have to look like this? Well, because what I want is that any interval of size 2 has the same probability. Well, that means the integral, if I take any window of size 2 over here, the integral has to be the same. So that means the function has to be flat. So the way we write this is the density function for a uniform random variable is just 1 over n, where n is the length of the integral of the interval. So it's going to be 1 over n if the value x is in 0 to n, and otherwise it's 0. So I'll have a quick quiz question. It should be, so the quiz question is, what is the, so I take a uniform random variable over 0 to n, and what is the mean? What's the average value of that variable? Sorry, can you say that again? Okay, so I'll put it a different way. Suppose I just told you that I'm going to pick a random point between 0 and n. Then what's, on average, what do you expect it to be? N by 2, right? And so you can actually get, and yeah, that's right. So you can actually get it by actually doing that integral. So what you get is, you get p of x, we said, is going to be 1 over n, right? So if I substitute 1 over n in there, and then the... if you substitute 1 over n in there and actually do the integral, you get the integral from 0 to n of x over n. And so then what you get by that is just is going to be n by 2. And you can also compute the variance of x, but I won't try. And you do it in the same way. You could actually just compute this integral, and it will be trivial, or trivial depending on how well you know calculus. And there it is. I want to say, and you can compute that as well. I'll leave that as a question. I'm not going to try to do that in my head because I usually embarrass myself even for easy ones. So here's another. Okay, so we have two other quiz questions. So the first is, we said if I have some continuous random variable and it has some density, obviously we said that density always has to be greater than zero, because otherwise I could get a negative probability. So need it also be true that the density is less than one, less than or equal to one? We could take a vote. Who says yes, the density always has to be less than one? Okay, who says no, sometimes the density can be greater than one? Okay, who, so I guess like the recent election, a lot of people like to abstain. So if you said it could be greater than one, what would be an example? If it's outside the range, I get zero. So that's not greater than one. Maybe I misunderstood you? Okay. I think you're saying the right thing. So you're saying if n is less than one.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So if I have a uniform random variable over 0 to 1/2, then the density is 1/1/2, which is 2. Right? That's greater than one. So why is that possible? Because if I integrate that over any region, I'm gonna get something that's one or less, right? Because it's only a half, it's only two for a very small period. So the density is a different thing than a probability. Right, it can be greater than one, but it's just when I integrate it, I have to get something that looks like a probability. So good. So let me talk about one more simple example of a random variable. And I want to talk about a joint uniform distribution. So suppose I'm throwing darts at a dartboard, and I'll also give you the information that I'm very bad at darts. So whenever I always manage to hit the board, but whenever I hit the board, it lands uniformly anywhere on the board. So then we can have, you know, x be the x position of the dart that I throw, and y be the y position. And then you can say, well, what's the, now there's a joint density of x and y that corresponds to where the dart lands. And so what would that look like? Right? It should look something like a uniform distribution, right? Because, it's going to be, because it's kind of the same kind of thing. That every area of the, every region of the same size is equally likely, same area is equally likely, but now it's over the circle, a circle of diameter 2, rather than being over a line. So what do you think the density would look like?
Normal distribution.
It could be, if I were good at darts, it might look like the normal distribution, because I would tend to land in the center. But I'm very bad at darts, so it's not more likely to land in the center than it is to and land in some place in the radius near the edge. That's the same thing as a normal distribution. One. It could be one. So suppose I said I defined p of x y to be equal to one if the point's on the circle. So let's see if that's a density function. So the way we would do that is we would take the integral of one over that circle. And so that gives you just the area of the circle. So if I take the area of a circle of diameter 2, that will be pi r squared, right? So 1 squared would be 1. So in that case, that looks right. I mean, right, that's right. No, pi r squared is 1, so pi r squared is pi, right? So that's not a density, because it integrates to something greater than 1. So what I could do instead is I could say, well, one was a good idea, right? Because then it's kind of, I have the sense that if I integrate over any little region, I get the same value. But the value I get over the whole space isn't one, like a probability has to be. So maybe I can just change it a little bit and get something that works. So how about 1/π? Right, and the reason for that is now it has the same. It's uniform in the same way that all regions of the same area have the same probability. But now, if I integrate it over that whole circle, Now I get one, like a density has to be. Okay, so we had a lot of people, so that's the other kind of trivial distribution, other kind of simple distribution. So now we had people kind of mentioning the Gaussian distribution, so maybe I should tell you what that is too. The Gaussian distribution is probably the most common continuous distribution. It's also one of the most easily analyzed. And it's, as we said, it's also called the normal distribution, as someone else said. And basically, the reason that it's so common is that it's often a good model for continuous random noise. So it's often a good model for white noise. So first, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you what the density function looks like. So that looks like, suppose I have some random variable x, and I'm going to say, and I want it to have a Gaussian distribution. And mu is going to be, this distribution is going to have two parameters. So these are going to be two, basically, inputs to the distribution that are fixed, that specify what the distribution looks like. And we're going to call these, coincidentally, mu and sigma squared. And the reason we call them that is that it's going to work out that mu is going to be the mean, and sigma squared is going to be the variance of the distribution. So the density function of a Gaussian is given by this formula that's on the right. This is one of those things that if you've never seen it before, it looks a little bit forbidding, but it's actually extremely simple. So the first thing to think about, there's chalk. Okay, good. So here's how you think about a Gaussian. See, I'm learning how to use this. Mu equals 0 and sigma squared equals 1, right? So then this thing of p of x is, if I just substitute 0 and 1 in there, I get 1 on root 2 pi x mu over mu squared over 2, x squared over 2. Okay, so the way to think about that is, the way to think about that is x squared, of course, just looks like this. So that can't be a probability density, right? Because there's no way it integrates to 1. There should be a minus here. Right? Minus x squared now takes it from this to this. And then if I take e to the minus x squared, well, now everything has to get positive because e to the x is always greater than 0. So I'll get, I'll get something that looks like, so now if I take e to the x squared, I get something that looks like this. Now this thing isn't a probability density yet. I didn't write this. So this is x squared, this is minus x squared, this is e to the minus x squared. So this thing isn't a probability density yet because it doesn't integrate to 1. So now if I divide it by something, so now if I take the integral of e to the minus x squared over 2, it turns out that's root 2 pi. And there's actually a trick to figuring this out, which I won't go into. But if you do that, then you get something that integrates to 1. So essentially what a Gaussian is it's just e to the minus x squared. So now what are these things mu and sigma doing? What mu is, if I change this from x squared to x minus mu squared, That just translates the Gaussian from left to right. So if I set mu equals to 2 here, then I'll just get a Gaussian that looks like this, rather than looks like this. Now if I add sigma squared in here, that just scales it. So that has the effect of either bringing it in if I make sigma smaller, or spreading it out if I made sigma squared bigger. And so so these things here are just ways to translate and spread it out. But it doesn't really affect what the Gaussian looks like. And then it turns out if I put sigma squared in here, I also have to put sigma squared in here just to make it integrate to 1. So that's what a Gaussian is. So I showed you, so that's the graph of a Gaussian. Here's a prettier version of the graph of a Gaussian. So it turns out that if I, you know, as I was saying before, if I start this thing where I set mu equals 0 and sigma squared equals 1, that's called a standard Gaussian or a standard normal. Just because since they all look the same, you might as well pick some standard values for it. You might as well pick 1 to be the most common one. And so we pick 0, 1 for that. And if I have some kind of, and I can always translate a variable. If I have some variable that looks, if I have some variable that's Gaussian, but it's not standard Gaussian, so it has some other mean invariance, I can always translate that into a standard one by doing this transformation: subtract the mean and divide by the standard deviation. And you can see that, well, if I take some random variable and subtract the mean, then I'm going to get a random variable with mean zero, right? And you can see that just by going back to the definition of the mean and looking at that integral, right? If x is mean mu, then x minus mu has to have mean zero. And then dividing by sigma is the same kind of thing, and it has the effect of changing the variance to one. And so that transformation, given any random variable, I could take x minus mu over sigma, and I'll get something with mean zero and standard deviation one. So even if I took a uniform random variable and did this transformation, I get a uniform random variable that was spaced around that had mean zero. But if I do this to a Gaussian random variable, then I get a standard Gaussian. I get a standard normal random variable. This slide is about what I talked about what this mysterious thing 2 pi sigma squared, root 2 pi sigma squared, does. And so the graph here is just an example of two Gaussians. So that tighter one is one that has lower variance, right? Because it tends to be, so the values tend to be closer to the mean. So it must have a smaller variance. And this thing that's more spread out has a higher variance because the values tend to be farther away from the mean. So the tighter the Gaussian is, the smaller that I make sigma squared, the tighter the peak that I get in the Gaussian distribution. Okay, so that's the univariate Gaussian. So now let me talk about a bivariate Gaussian. So just like you could have just like we could have joint distributions over continuous variables, I can also have a joint distribution over discrete variables and over uniform variables. You can also have a joint distribution over Gaussian variables. So to start off with, let's just take two variables that I'll call x1 and x2. And whenever I say this kind of x1 twiddle n, that's just a notation for saying that x1 is going to be distributed as a Gaussian. And so x1 is going to have mean mu 1 and standard deviation sigma squared 1. And then x2 similarly is going to have mean mu 2 and standard deviation sigma squared 2. So if x1 and x2 are independent, then their joint distribution is that thing on the first line. Now, the way we get this thing on the first line, it's again one of these Gaussian things that looks scarier than it is. What you'll see is all this is I took this thing for x1, and then I took this thing for x2, and I multiplied them together. And that's how I got that thing on the top. So you see there's one. So the reason why I have 2 pi rather than root 2 pi is I've got root 2 pi squared. And I have sigma 1 squared and sigma 2 squared, the square root of those, from this. And then I took the two exps together and then brought them together with the plus sign. And that's how I got that thing at the top. And that's generally true for any random variable. If I have two random variables that are independent, then the joint if x1 and x2 are any random variables that are independent, then the joint density of p of x1, p of x2 is equal to the product of the marginal density p of x1 times the marginal p of x2. That's what it means for two random variables to be independent. So another way I can write this is using a matrix notation. So rather than writing x1 and x2, I can write this boldface x. And so the boldface I'm taking to mean a vector. So this thing is going to be a vector of the values x1, x2. And I can do the same thing for the means. I can also take I'll take this vector mu to be a combination of values mu 1 and mu 2. And then sigma, it turns out, gets more complicated because I'm not really going to go into this, but when you generalize this, not only do you get the variance of does sigma 1 have some variance and sigma 2 has some variance, but I can also say, well, do they depend on each other at all? And so what these off-diagonal terms are, is they're a measure of whether those two variables depend on each other. And since we said they're independent, they don't depend on each other at all. So I'll put a zero here. And so now if I take this particular matrix and now write it like this, so if I take the vector x minus mu transpose times the matrix sigma inverse times x minus mu, if you write out what that thing is, it's just that thing, it's the same thing on the top slide. So it's just a way of taking what the top on the top line. So this kind of matrix notation here is just a more compact way of writing the thing in the top line using linear algebra. But there's nothing new in the bottom line. So the nice thing about writing it in the way in the bottom line as opposed to writing it on the top line is that if I wanted to have a Gaussian over 3 variables or 4 variables or 10 variables, then the equation on the bottom still works, right? I can generalize that. Whereas the equation on the top is going to get a little bit more unwieldy. So here's what some Gaussian random variables look like. So